space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this
land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's old Shaziz here. You're listening to Mad Science on the Shaziz Radio Network and multi other networks out there as well. Thanks everybody for broadcasting and rebroadcasting and all that you do behind the scenes. So today I want to talk about static electricity because it's pretty amazing. Initially, when I very first started off in the alternative energy, I was driving down the road. And keep in mind, I had other reasons why I started off to do alternative energy, but I was driving down the road one day and it hit me like a ton of bricks how to build a motor that would be working off of pretty much same thing that the static motor works off of. Actually, if you go over to the podcast page, and I'll throw a link over there in the Shaziz Radio chat room, and as soon as I get it copied, select all and copy. Control-C. Quick copy there. All right, well, anyway, back in the day, let me do this again. Sorry about that, folks. Doggone it. Hate it when that happens. Alright, I'm sitting here pushing buttons and clicking things and that probably shouldn't be clicking. Alright, well, anyway, back whenever I very first started into alternative energy, I was thinking of all different ways to build generators and such. And like I said, I'm going to post, I'm doing it right now, post a link in the Shaziz Radio chat room and a link into the Awake Radio chat room. And everybody else could grab it from there if you like. But basically, it's on the podcast page. If you scroll down about three or four pictures down, you'll see a motor there. It's electric pulse engine, and essentially it's kind of like they call them solenoid motors. I drew this diagram quite some time back, probably 10, 15 years or more. I can't even remember how long it's been. It's been quite a long time ago. But I was driving down a road one day and it hit me like a ton of bricks, and I started drawing this in my head. And essentially, what's going on there is you have a flywheel. You guys got terrible timing, man. You call like right in the middle of the show. You should like call right like during the tune or something.
You say that every time.
We like to wait till you get in the middle of a roll and interrupt
you.
Yeah. It's tradition.
All right, well, like tradition goes, you guys did well. Anyway, yeah. I guess I'll put that link in there for you guys to look at as well. You're in the Mad Science Room. No, I just call you. Is that where you called from?
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, I'm trying to
call it. I'm
trying to find your chat there. Doggone it.
Bill's it.
I got two left hands today or something. All right, there you go. There's the link. I guess you could have just went to the podcast page. Anyway, I got an echo coming back from Bilky there. I like your helmet. All right, well, click on that link there and scroll down, and you'll see a blue picture with it's a GIF animation of a diagram that I drew about 10, 15 years or more back. Anyway, like I said, I was driving down the road and it hit me like a ton of bricks how to build an electric motor that essentially they call them nowadays solenoid motors, and how to get it to pulse at the right time. And so what you see going on in this picture is a flywheel that has several sets of magnets around there. And each one of the magnetrons around there pulse as the magnets are coming past there, and every time one of them pulses, it pulses a sequence of coils that basically kick out a lever, a rod that then turns the camshafts. It's a dual camshaft going on there. And so this picture's been around for quite some time, but the key is that was the very first generator that I ever built, and it was using lawnmower magnetrons and a flywheel system that had four sets of magnets on it. And the pole pieces on the magnets, it came out of weed eater flywheels that they're really a pain in the neck. You got to melt the flywheels down to get the pole pieces out. And obviously, once you heat up the magnets, they're no good anymore. But essentially, inside of a lawnmower flywheel, all you have is one magnet and two pole pieces to change from north to south, and that's how it pulses those coils when it spins by. And so I put four sets of these on there on the initial design so that it would pulse four times per cycle and get even more. And that specific design right there, I'm going to rebuild it again I got the crud shocked out of myself quite a few times with that thing when I first started. Because when those things pulse, they pulse hard. And, you know, that's essentially what's going on with this static motor. I also posted that link in the chat room as well. I call it the lightning motor because I'm trying to be, like, different or something. Essentially, that's what it is, lightning. But, anyway, static electricity, as I've been tinkering around with it, I've been seeing some pretty interesting things. Like, there's things that happen right before the discharge of that static energy. You'll get a static buildup. I also posted a link inside the chat room for Tin Man. He did a video on, what the heck was that called? The Venturi effect, where essentially he was using a about 5 pounds of pressure of air. And is that me?
Yeah,
that's me. I'm not going. I love radio. Anyway, I did. Somebody got to kill that.
That's weird.
Alright, try
that. This time it isn't me, so.
Alright, I got it. It was me. Okay, you guys still there?
Yes, yep.
Alright, cool. Anyway, Tin Man did a video where he took 5 pounds of air pressure and run it through a nozzle that had a valve on the top of it, and once the air was going through the nozzle, he was able to turn the valve on and double up on the pressure of air that's coming through there. It was literally creating a vacuum on one side while the air pressure was blown out the other side, and they called that the Venturi effect. Well, he was saying that it would be nice if you could do this with electricity, and I believe that you actually can because of what I've seen with the static energy discharges. I've been sitting around for probably the last 3 weeks messing with this thing and watching, and there's all kinds of anomalies that occur, like right before the static discharge. First off, you can see in between the probes and where it's getting ready to hit, it's like the little wavy thing that you see whenever there's heat coming off the street. you can actually see that. And then you can watch as the wiring coils up, the wire coming from the top of the Van de Graaff down that's actually igniting the charge, you can watch as that coils up and then right before it gets ready to discharge, recoils. And then you get the obvious discharge across the deal. But in the process of that thing charging up, you can see an attraction where it's actually pulling the rotor towards it, and then when that discharge comes out, it kicks the rotor around. So it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's not new discoveries. Francis Hauksbee, he was back in the 1600s or something like that. 1660 to 1713, I guess, is what the date on that Wikipedia deal is. But he was doing static electricity experiments way back in 1700s that resulted in his Hauksbee device, which essentially is a evacuated glass ball that has, it says on here that it had mercury inside there. And then you got a wheel that actually turns the ball around, and when that wheel spins around, it builds up a static charge off of that mercury inside there. And I've also seen them done with carbon, and basically it was a form of electricity. Anyway, everybody out there has experienced static electricity at some point in time, static discharge, and the reason why I'm messing with this particular deal that I think for alternative energy purposes is that it's the cheapest and easiest of all the different alternative energy methods out there, because there's static energy everywhere. And back to the Venturi effect, I feel like from what I've witnessed watching my machine work is that Venturi effect is actually occurring right before that static discharge, as it's coming in, creating a vacuum and giving it a lot more punch than it normally would have had. And if you allow the spark gap to be far enough away to where the capacitors that I've put on there can fully charge to their maximum, then you get a better effect out of there. There's two keys to making that static motor work. Is number one, timing on your spark gaps. I got multiple spark gaps going to each one of the probes around there, and the distance between the probe and the rotor itself, to get the best punch out of it, you want it to be farther away than you would be for your normal static motor, like you see out there in, I think, Brimstar.org did one. I think Lid Motor did one. Cultus was messing around with some, and there's many of them, many others out there. Yeah, Google those up. So, what do you guys think about these the static motors that I'm talking about there? Anybody?
I think they can be pretty useful. I mean, you get static from all sorts of sources.
Well, one thing that I noticed as well, and this is a key factor, is like, you know, your average generator, when you put it under a load, everything you add to it from that point on is going to drag it down yet even further. However, while I was doing this, I just out of curiosity, I unhooked two of the probes, and I hooked one of each one of them to a fluorescent light bulb. And every time that fluorescent light bulb pulsed, it didn't affect anything else around there. When the static charge goes, it's going to go anywhere and everywhere, the shortest place to ground. But it didn't affect the power of the actual discharge itself. I mean, it's as if it was just, it's sending a lot more energy out than what you think it is. And you can actually, I picked up a capacitor that was on the floor next to this thing. Wasn't even plugged into it. And I always discharge these capacitors. And that thing shocked the crud out of me. So, and somehow, you get a little bit of wireless transfer going on to that capacitor. So,
With static, you can pull static off the ground, you can pull static off the atmosphere?
Yeah, you can pull it out of the air. I'm actually going to build a telescopic tower, something that I can raise and lower at, let's say, in maybe 8-foot increments or 10-foot increments or something like that. But I'm going to build a telescopic tower that has two aluminum plates at the very top of it as the top load separated. Basically like a capacitor at the top.
All right, and how does Tesla play into this? Is this anything from Tesla?
A lot of this stuff right here was way before Tesla, but however, I feel like that this particular technology right here combined with Tesla technology could work in conjunction with each other. Because the only thing that's going on with the Tesla coil is when you charge up the capacitor and that shoots across to that spark gap, it pulses the primary, which sends a field up the secondary and begins to energize the secondary. And so with that said, it doesn't matter the power source that you actually put in to before the capacitor, you could still shoot that energy across to that primary and get that thing to pulse just the same way. And so imagine if you had a static generator that could literally charge those capacitors on demand to the point where you could charge that primary on the Tesla coil. You can do the exact same thing that you would be doing with a heavy-duty AC power or even a DC power for that matter. And you can actually, instead of having to have a rotary spark gap, you can actually use the generator itself as the rotary spark gap because it's pulsing not direct, if you understand what I'm saying. It's pulsing.
Yeah, it's generating a pulse.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhat. I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff, so you guys are teaching me quite a bit.
Well, it's an amazing concept because as it stands right now, they use microwave oven transformers or they use neon sign transformers to pulse Tesla coils. Well, those are, except for the one I got, the Beckett oil burner igniter, it's a 12-volt oil burner igniter, but the rest of them are running off of 120-volt mains. Well, that's kind of counterproductive to what we're trying to do. If you got to produce 120 volts from the start to finish, then, that's not going to do you any good. But for wireless energy purposes, yeah, you could start a generator up, pulse a Tesla coil, transmit it to a receiver, and then they have electricity on the opposite side. However, you got to have the first initial input. But with a static generator, when you do this, you're not getting any kind of back EMF or bogging down the load, no cogging effect or anything. It's just it's freewheeling. It's picking up a static charge. It's discharging it to a capacitor bank. And I'll tell you one thing's for sure. I made these. You'll see them in the video. I made these little capacitors. I used these lenses out of some outside lawn. Oh, doggone it. Outside.
Lamps?
Yeah, solar lamps.
Right.
I had some broken ones, so I took the lenses out of them and I used those for the plastic of the. I put aluminum sheeting on the inside and aluminum sheeting on the outside. And man, I'll tell you what. I had one of those charged up, and I didn't realize that it was still charged up, and I left a black mark on my thumb when that thing discharged. You want to talk about hurt? That hurt. And so I know the power potential these things got. You can literally build massive capacitor banks. Me and my friend Justin, we're going to actually take a 50-gallon drum, and we're going to build a oil-filled capacitor with aluminum sheeting inside that thing. So if you can picture a 50-gallon plastic barrel that has round discs all the way from the bottom, you have aluminum disc, and then you'll have a insulator, and then aluminum disc, and so on, just stacked all the way up, and then all your lines running from plate to plate in series all the way up to through the top of that barrel. You want to talk about power, you charge that thing up, you better not touch that one.
Oh.
And it could all be made out of junk, Worst case scenario, let's say hypothetically the apocalypse happens, the power grid goes down, you need a fast source of power to, at the very least, lighting. There's aluminum signs everywhere. Ain't nobody going to be watching the speed limit anyway during the apocalypse, are they? I mean, like, I wouldn't be. I'd be trying to get out of Dodge.
Providing by that time there's any fuel or anything, I doubt if anybody's going to be driving anywhere.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't need fuel if you built one of these deals. This static motor that I put there is one I call the lightning motor. That I have my own twist on there because essentially it's working exactly the way lightning works. It's a static discharge. But if you built this thing right, you could literally build a static engine that had enough torque to rival the best electric motor out there. There's no doubt in my mind after what I've seen with this thing right here. I mean, from a dead stop, when one of them lightning bolt punches out there, you can see that thing jump. You not only see it jump, you see the wiring that is connected to the whole entire system jump. So there's a lot of pressure built up behind there. Now, this is made out of junk. If a person took and built one out of precision, with precision bearings, some smooth bearings, you could actually have a set of the disc for the static buildup on one side set back to put back into the system. And static electricity don't care where it goes. I mean, it's going to go anywhere. So while you're running that thing, you start punching it up with some of its own juice. The faster you get that thing going, the more powerful it's going to become. And all you're doing is using static discharge of pressure from high voltage to turn the rotors. It's a simple concept. And for those of you who's not sure about how powerful a capacitor is, charge up one and discharge it with a screwdriver. I have literally welded a chunk out of the side of a screwdriver with that, with the capacitor.
Or do it like Raymond. He likes to lick them bug rats. That thing discharges. You know about it.
And
he knows the full power.
Yeah, I bet he wouldn't lick the one I got. That's a full extra 500 volt capacitors on that thing. That thing turns bugs into dust. Anyway,
I needed to get a starter for my mower here. Well, about 2 weeks ago when the season started, and I got a backlog of people to do, and been trying to knock that out. But anyway, the starter just decided it wanted to go nyeh, 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 and smoke. So anyway, smoked that and looked up a new starter, seeing as this one's been rebuilt twice, but the shaft is slightly bent. Checked the battery. The battery was 12.7. I had two of them in parallel on it, so it's not a question of amps. $225 for a new one. I found one for $68. Took 4 days to get here. Got that. Put it on. A couple days later, because it had been raining, and I finally got it on there, and oh, it started up great. Went out to go do a lawn. The starter ring came off. The starter ring is about $12, but you can't buy the starter ring separate. You have to buy it with the flywheel assembly. $259. And I went to searching for old and used and abused, and I found one for $45. I was out of bucks. I called Dr. Raymond Head from Boomtown Laboratories, who has been investing in properties down here. I got the, it was $45 plus 21 shipping and handling. He forgot to send it to my address. So it was a few more days before I got it. Finally got the thing, and I took the engine down, and I set it down there, and it fit perfectly, except there was a big hole in the middle where there should have been a smaller hole. The man also sent the stator. Inside this flywheel assembly is a ring of magnets, north, south, all the way around. Uh-huh. So I'm in a hunt to sit there and find just the right size shaft to mount that thing on. I'm going to make a little generator for playing around with.
Cool.
For the 12 volts. Plus, I'll have that flywheel magnet on the outside. But anyway, that's actually saved the day, because it had a flywheel ring on it that I could use that I would have bought for $12. And I got that, and I put it on. We heated it up, stretched it out, and got it to pop off there with a few taps with some wood. Tapped it on the other one while it was still hot and expanded. Stuck her on, and that thing starts vroom. You barely hear it turn, and the thing starts. Best it's ever started and went. So I'm real happy at that, but I got extras. I got coils that came off the other mower. I also got the stator and everything, and the magnets, and a rotor to sit there and play with. So I'm going to be playing with that kind of next.
Well, magnetrons off of there, like I said, that was the very first generator that I ever made. And I did a lot of experiments back in the day on how to get those things to pulse even harder. And had I known back then what I know now about capacitors, I'd still be messing around with that. The only reason why I even got away from that is because I got a buddy named Jim who's also into alternative energy that came over and got me interested in some other devices out there and kind of distracted me away from my initial goal, because my initial goal was to literally build that electric pulse engine. And I've seen a few people out there that's done it since that's actually made that pulse engine pretty much exactly the same way that I did it. Of course, they used some different styles of coils or whatever. But my idea was not to do it basically like they did. I wanted to take and create a solenoid that used high voltage as opposed to having to have a lot of current flow like the standard solenoids. It's all in the windings. You're still going to get the magnetic field,
Right.
But I wanted to be able to do it just slightly different than what everybody else was doing. So my suggestion for people out there, always remember, you know, even worst case scenario, one of them magnetrons, an old lawnmower and the flywheel on there like you're talking about, buddy, there's a generator source right there. And if you ain't got no way to mill anything down to keep it precision, because, you know, when you got that stator in between there on your motor, you gotta, it's got to be right in dead center. It's going to slam up against the magnets while it's spinning. So I just say take all the what you can off of the doggone motor, like take the spark plug out of it so you have no compression to fight with, and then you can sit there and spin that shaft on that lawnmower. However you can do it, maybe a windmill or something like that. But all you got to do is spin that doggone rotor around, and there you go. You got a little generator. So you can turn an old lawnmower that won't run on gas into an electric generator for emergency purposes.
It's got bolts on the top of this thing. All I got to do is find a spindle to slap into the bottom of it, bolt it on there, and it's got a keyway, and it's also got bolt holes to mount the prop. So you know what I'm doing.
Yeah. You know, that would be an interesting project to, you want to talk about redneck generator, find an old lawnmower that maybe's got the side of the block blown out of it, but the rotor and the stator is still fine on it, and basically hook a prop to that doggone output shaft and produce electricity with it. Now, wouldn't that be cool?
I'm planning on a video. I don't have any. It basically wants to idle right at about 800-900 RPM, so it won't be that big of a prop, but that's okay. I looked at it. There's enough room on those on the coils. I mean, it's got some fat gauge wire, probably right about 12 gauge. Well, shoot, I can add more to it and put both of those in series. I won't need but half the RPM. I can put a shorter prop on it, and she'll go.
Yeah.
And hey, free is free. It ought to be great.
Well, I'm sure that if you go down there around your neighborhood, somebody's blown up a good riding lawnmower. And most riding lawnmowers that have electric start on them have a charging system on there.
Oh yeah.
And so just get that motor right there, take off what you can, leave everything else intact so that you don't have to worry about the flywheel being balanced, and hook a propeller to it, man, and you got yourself a generator.
Yeah, like take the piston and the piston push rod and all that stuff all the way completely out of the thing. Just use the bearings on the motor.
Yeah.
Leave the flywheel on there, and hey, you ought to be able to do good. But if you take it off there, you can actually add some more windings on the stator and get something out of it.
Yeah, but for an apocalyptic scenario, and you ain't got access to nothing, but you got an old lawnmower out there that has that stuff in it, and you can't get no fuel for the doggone thing anyway, at least you got a 12-volt generator source right there.
That's right.
So, you know, that's the kind of thinking outside the box kind of thing that I like, is that, you know, I'm going to have to do this. I'm really going to go find somebody who's got a blown motor and get that motor and turn it into a, we should do a collaboration thing. Maybe you can make me a doggone prop for that thing, and I'll turn it into a windmill.
I told you, anytime you want a prop, just tell me the RPMs of that motor, and I will get you a prop.
Well, I don't know what the RPMs of the motor, because I'm just going to grab the first...
What I need to do is you look on the side of the motor, it'll tell you what voltage it likes to run at, and it'll also tell you the RPMs. RPMs per volt is the RPMs divided by the voltage.
Well, that sounds
easy
enough.
I will custom make you a prop.
That sounds easy enough. And
yeah.
I got a welder. I'll sit there and weld up a frame like an old windmill style frame and bolt that motor to the top of that thing and hook your prop to it, and there we go, man.
That'll work.
Can I ask a question here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Earlier you were talking about the Venturi effect.
Yeah.
So my understanding of Venturi is kind of like looking at an hourglass. So you got an intake, it narrows down, and then you got a discharge. So the intake and the discharge are the same. What's flowing through the Venturi?
Well, it's like this. If you got a flow going one way, you can actually try this. You can create a vacuum with a garden hose. If you got like a Y shape deal, like maybe one of them double connectors for a garden hose, if you shoot the water through one side, as the water pressure is going through the one side, it is creating a vacuum on the opposite side. And you can hook a hose to that opposite side, stick it down in a bucket, and drain that bucket out.
I might could explain it in a little easier terms that are visual. If you've got pressure and you got a small orifice, just like a squirt gun, man, you can shoot that like 10 feet or more. But it's not much volume. The idea of the Venturi is to put that jet right down the middle of a tube, and that jet, because of the pressure and its speed, is going to drag more air.
Yeah, they use it for
and that amplifies fuel. That amplifies the amount of air that you got actually doing the work, and that's pretty much what the Venturi effect is. The same thing on the back side of a blade when it's going.
Yeah, it creates a suction on one side, and then the pressure from the other side. Did we lose you there, buddy?
No, I hope not.
Oh, okay. You just went silent there for a second. It actually creates a suction when the pressure is going one way. When he opens up that nozzle, it starts sucking the pressure from outside and doubles up the pressure that's coming. He started off with 5 pounds of pressure, and got the more pressure from the volume that was coming through.
And water has water, or basically the air has a momentum. Behind it is a vacuum. In front of it is a pressure. Now, if you open up like spreads out, that speed wants to take more air with it, and that winds up being a vacuum on the other side, and it spreads it out. But that also,
well, I believe,
at a certain speed, it puts a vacuum in that skinny spot in the middle.
I believe the same thing is occurring with the static discharge, because you can actually, I don't know if you've ever messed around with negative ion generators or even static motors or Van de Graaffs, but you can actually feel a cool wind as that thing is running, because it's sucking energy out from the air there, and you can actually feel the atmosphere around it moving. And there's actually a cool wind around it. It happens with a negative ion generator and a static generator. So
right.
I'm thinking when that discharge is going, it's not only taking the energy that it initially started with, but it's actually acting just like the Venturi effect and sucking more in with it on the way through. I mean, it's building up more power on the way out. So
not power.
Well,
it's either speed or pressure.
More pressure, more like it probably. But either way, you can see a distinct difference in that the lightning bolt is what I like to call it. Without any of the capacitors, it's a really thin discharge. You add a capacitor to that, now you're adding that extra pressure that's going on. You see a thick discharge going across there. It's quite impressive, and the thicker that discharge, the farther apart that gap is, the more power that it's punching when it hits across to the other side. Right before it actually discharges, like I said, you could almost see the rotor trying to pull towards that charge, and then the punch comes out, and then you see that thing kick around.
Yeah, that blue spark means higher voltage. A white spark means higher amperage. So you can pretty much tell what your flexibility is when you see the spark.
With your standard Atmo motor, the little static motors that they've got running around, basically it's building up a charge, and then the opposites attract, and so it goes around and discharges on the negative plate or whatever, vice versa. But they don't have a lot of torque to them, because it's just basically trading electrons from one side, you know, the charge up on one side, and then it'll attract to a negative side and then discharge and so on and so forth. That's how they get the thing to spin. But this, on the other hand, isn't relying on that trade of electrons to that fashion. It's the pressure that's coming out that's actually pushing that rotor. And so the harder you can get that thing to pulse, the faster you can get it to go. Radio silence. I love it.
What, you can't hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
Oh, that's it exactly.
Anyway, does that answer your question there, Bilky? No? Yeah? No?
Yeah, it sure did. Thanks.
I mention I love that helmet?
Yeah, you did, but I had to close out Shaz's radio because that's where the feedback was coming from. And
oh. Well, if you got an extra one of those helmets, I sure would like to have one of those in my lab there.
Well, you know, with everything that...
What happened? Did we lose him?
No.
I'm still here.
Oh.
Oh, we lost Justin. I think he had to jump out of here.
Oh.
Yeah, he left a comment in chat.
Alright, oh, well, so anyway, like I said, I studied all the different devices out there, and there are a lot of them. There are some out there that are bogus, and there are some, even the bogus ones I like, because they always have an anomaly that made them think it was going to work to begin with, and that anomaly is what I'm interested in. And my brain works mechanically, so looking at these anomalies and thinking, you know, what kind of work could I get out of this anomaly? You put all these things in conjunction with one another, a static motor with a Tesla coil, now you got an easy generator with wireless energy transfer, and back to what I was saying about the static motor charging capacitors, you can have as many capacitors as you want in that system, and it doesn't matter. You're not going to affect the discharge of that in any way whatsoever. It's not going to take away any of that energy. It's static energy, like I said, wants to go anywhere. It's going to take the shortest path to ground, but it's not through. Once it discharges, it ain't through. It's still moving around. And it's actually charging capacitors up. I had a capacitor, like I said, that was sitting on a floor, wasn't even connected to nothing. And I charged that thing up and shocked the crud out of myself because I picked it up, handling it, and thinking, you know, it was already discharged. I was going to connect it to something else. I'm like, what the heck just happened there? But, you know, static energy is fascinating. You know, they was doing this back in the 1700s. And we know all the stuff that Tesla and Edison were doing in the 1800s. This technology's been around forever and a day. And if you took this version, like you see, that's exactly how that machine would be created. You could literally build a generator that you put some lightning rods up there to deliberately grab up some lightning bolts in there. You got a giant static motor that has massive capabilities. Imagine how many thousands of volts is in one single lightning bolt, and how many capacitors you could charge with that. You know, I keep talking about capacitors. You know, a capacitor can be used as a battery. You can try it out. As a matter of fact, those little shake-up flashlights that have a little magnet in the coil that goes through there. When you shake that flashlight up, it creates a magnetic field that basically charges up through a little mini rectifier into a capacitor, and that capacitor is basically what maintains the battery on the thing. So there you go. You know, you hook an LED to a capacitor, charge it up, and you can sit there and watch. Just depending on the size of that capacitor will determine on how long that little LED will stay lit. So if you have a large enough capacitor bank and you can charge that thing up, you can run an inverter off of that capacitor bank. Inverters are set up to change AC or DC to AC current so that you can run your normal household stuff. And it's only relying on how much energy you can put in from the input side. So if you've got a large enough capacitor bank, basically the equivalence of that inverter being the LED to the large capacitor bank, you'll get that thing to run. And if using the right system on your static motor, you can keep that thing charged up on demand. It's the easiest form of tapping into the energy around us that's out there. It's the easiest, the cheapest, doesn't require no copper wire for coils or anything like that. All you're doing is producing a static charge, shooting it across the spark gap, charging up a capacitor, and using that energy on the other side. So what do you think?
I think it's pretty cool.
Well,
this video that I've seen before that Stephen Gibbons posted in the chat, cylinder, pulse motor, or basically generator or motor, whichever you want.
Well, lid motor, he does some really amazing work. He does like micro scale versions of all kinds of stuff, but he made some pill bottle electrostatic motors, and they were pretty impressive, you know. But not only did he do that, he made a generator out of there. And to this day, I don't know if he's done it yet or not. I don't think he has. But I told him, I said, you ought to try to see if you can hook that that motor to the generator pill bottle and see if you can get that electrostatic motor to generate electricity on the opposite side. I believe you can. So
if, bet you can.
Yeah. So
most things work in reverse, just like a Stirling engine. You add heat on one side and cold on the other side and it'll turn. But if you spin that shaft in the same direction, you'll get heat and cold on those same ones. If you turn it in the other direction, you'll get the opposite temperature effect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much how your doggone refrigerator works as well. So, the Stirling effect.
So imagine you had a really fine-built electrostatic generator. And like I said, you took a couple of the stack of the plates on there and dedicated those to putting them back, putting that energy back into the system. Not only would you get it to run more efficiently, but you still have the generator capabilities without any kind of back EMF whatsoever. And if you could take that same entire system and encase it into a vacuum system that maybe has one of the inert gases in it, such as argon, which I like argon the best, but if you had that inside a vacuum system and used a magnetic coupling for your flywheel to your clutch of the transmission you wanted to run with that thing, you wouldn't even have to have them directly coupled. Have you ever seen any magnetically coupled shafts that anybody's done out there on YouTube, buddy?
You mean like a magnetic clutch?
Yeah, they pretty much got a set of magnets on a flywheel on one side, and on the opposite side, they're not touching each other, but the magnetic field's strong enough that once you get that other one spinning, it spins the clutch on the opposite side.
Right. There's two ways of that. You can have other magnets.
So either way, that would make it so you wouldn't have to have them directly coupled, and you could keep that entire motor inside a vacuum, and it would be building up plasma energy inside there. So there's so many different potentials of literally building a high-tech version of just starting off with this static motor right there.
Pretty much what Boomer was going to do is, I mean, if you use an aluminum flywheel as part of your clutch, you bring it close to that, and the lens effect takes care of that. It drags that aluminum over there without even being touched and everything. What he was doing was the cold steam engine, and his rotor was floating in on the outside, so you can put coils on the outside to pull your force out, basically electrically. But there's also, I mean, he was also thinking about throwing the experiment with a metal ring on the outside to sit there and follow it so you can watch it move on the outside.
Well, I'm going to do some pretty cool experiments with this one here once I get it everything sorted out and perfected. And it's pretty temperamental right at the moment, because you have to make sure that you have everything adjusted just right, the timing just right on there. And, man, I had that thing running perfect. And all I did was move one wire. And couldn't figure out where in the heck that wire was, whether it was laying up against another one and static was jumping across to one of them or whatever. But that drove me insane until I done it.
How long did it take you to figure out exactly where to put your little brushes?
There's no brushes on there.
Well, you got static brushes where it leaves and goes to the cylinder, right?
No. No, all I got is a wire that goes across to a plate, which is a multi-stack plate of a disc. It has aluminum, plastic, aluminum, styrofoam, and then the next set of plates, same thing. There's probably about a stack of four down underneath. And the only reason for that right there is to hold an extra bit of static charge up. And then there's a steel rod that comes up through the center of that. Inside of that has a basically I sawed off a piece of antenna to make a conductor, so no matter where that rotor is, it's connected to that metal rod, but it's not, you know, it's not clamping down on it. It's just picking up the energy as it's going around. Inside there, on top of the metal rod, there's a BB sitting in there, and on top of that is a little piece of carbon rod that all I did was use those two things there for a bearing. And so it was about as precision as I get. I didn't want to have it sitting on a pinhead, because that's just not gonna be strong enough. I want it to actually have to go through the process of turning a bearing. So I created a bearing in there to deliberately give it some friction. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because if you can get this thing to be a self-starter and have some torque to it, once you get the thing up and running, I mean, there you go, man. All you're using is high voltage static discharge, the pressure of the high voltage static discharge to turn that rotor. And from that, you know, whatever modifications. Did we lose Bilky too?
It looks like it.
Oh.
That's all right. His internet goes in and out sometimes. I'm sure he'll be.
So, you got any thoughts on the deal?
Yeah, when I learned as a kid on the soapbox derbies that Vaseline is your best lubricant. But the only problem with Vaseline...
It's funny you say that, because I decided to put some on there and all I had was chapstick.
So it works. It's not as good as the Vaseline. You can get that stuff...
You keep cutting in and out for some reason. Buddy?
Yeah?
You keep cutting in and out.
Oh.
You're talking and then you're gone, then you're talking, then you're gone. Anyway, you were saying?
We used to take the Vaseline. The thing is, as long as you add a little Vaseline to the bearings every time instead of packing them, after a while. But that's the best lubricant you can get there. Even with mentholated, there's lots of petroleum-based products in the house that you can use just about any time.
Yeah, it's in a pinch, you got that doggone chapstick and you need to lube a bearing, there you go, man. It works.
Oh, yeah. Dip.
But either way, like I said, this the static energy is pretty doggone impressive as far as I'm concerned. And I'm finding out a lot of different things. Actually, I threw some different links up in the chat room, one of which was somebody was asking the question why the doggone thing glowed, the Hawksby device. Let me see if I can find that doggone link. Anyway, he's wondering why you're getting light off of it. You know, it had a fluorescence kind of deal going on with it. Actually, I believe that at some point he was literally creating plasma inside that thing. You know, anytime you're messing around with high voltage, you know, he's got it in a vacuum. Even atmosphere itself, you know, it's not going to be like a perfect vacuum. But there's got to be something left inside there. You know what I'm saying?
I figured out the cutting in and out, and I was trying to get Bilky back in here.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, his internet dropped back.
Yeah, you got to love modern technology. Always at the worst time. Anyway, that's what I'm working on. The lightning motor, keep everybody updated with that one right there. And basically, there's that doggone link. Yeah.
Hey, did you make a video on that static motor?
Yeah, it's in the chat room. I put a link in there.
Oh, okay. I didn't get to one.
It's on the physics website. Physics Stack Exchange. Why does a Hauksbee electrostatic machine produce light? And it was just a comment in there that did caught my eye. You know, it's basically in a vacuum. And so, to some extent, he pretty much had a fluorescence going on inside there. Because mercury, you know, that's what they put inside mercury vapor bulbs. And if you get mercury vapor inside there and you got a high voltage static charge in there, you can literally create plasma inside there.
So is that your video that's stuck in here and on that page?
Yeah, it should be a picture.
As seen in this show, see from 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and it has a YouTube link. Is that yours?
Usually it shows a picture of the deal on there.
I didn't.
That little cool solenoid motor right there looks just like what I was talking about. Stephen Gibbons put that in there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find you a link. Look over there in the Awake chat room. You should see it up there. Right above the Wikipedia links. It says lightning motor on the thumbnail.
Awake host chat. Nope. Oh, over, maybe it's on the other. I'm not on the super chat.
Oh, that's where I'm at.
I've got to run them on separate pooters here. Anyway,
it's on there. And it's pretty interesting. If you look at that thing as a scaled down version of what could be on a scaled up version. Actually, the aluminum probes on there were initially designed to be capacitors themselves, so I'm actually looking for some of the... they got these new igniters that they use on a lot of newer vehicles that basically look like just like those probes there, but they're, you know, they're the ignition coils. You know which ones I'm talking about? The new igniters that they use in fuel injection?
Right, I do.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to try to find some of those and do some tests with them to see if I can't get some of them to put off a really good charge. I know that back in the day, whenever I first made that one out of the lawnmower magnetrons, that it had the same effect with the pressure whenever that thing would discharge. And all I was doing back in the day was discharging across to a spark gap and then igniting some bulbs and stuff like that. But either way, let's say we take a quick music break and then come back.
Yeah, I think we got OYM Ireland wanting to come on here. He didn't throw his thumb up there. He wanted to know what the subject matter is.
Cool.
We'll drop in here during the break and bring him up to speed.
Cool. All right, well, we'll throw in a quick tune or two and refresh our coffee, and then we'll be back. Stay tuned, everybody listening to Mad Science.
Crap. Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Very smart.
That's right. You're listening to Shazay's Mad Science. Got Muddy Mudman on there. Go over and check out his YouTube channel. He's got a lot of informative how-to videos on making wind turbines and props and stuff like that. So, with that said, we were talking about static energy. Pretty impressive stuff, man. This little lightning motor that I like to call it right there. And I call it that because at some point in time, I'm actually going to build a larger version and put a lightning rod out in the middle of my field to try to capture up some energy and get that turkey to spin. What do you think?
I bet it'll spin. I definitely think it'll spin.
Well, I'm sure it will. I'm going to make a telescopic lightning rod. Essentially, I'm going to use some tubing, large diameter at the bottom, you know, smaller, just like a regular old telescopic antenna. And I'm actually going to make a system by which you can use like one of the old style snakes, you know, that you use for plumbing or whatever.
Right.
To push it up through the center to actually extend that thing up, and you could bring it to different heights and take measurements of how much static energy you're getting from each level up there. Because supposedly there's an equation out there that tells you that how many feet off the ground a voltage that you can acquire the higher you get up. Now, if I don't have to go completely 200 feet in the air, then I get it made. But I can make a pulley system guide wires that would actually stabilize this thing and bring it up as high as I can possibly get it to find out how much voltage I can get, you know, from that to that. And trail my ground wire and my power wire up with it as it telescopes up as well. Same type of system, you know, a pulley system. So basically, you know, like one of them old style umbrellas that you roll up with a little crank deal.
And say that again.
The old style umbrellas that you put out there on your lawn furniture, where you got that little
right.
Knob and you turn that up and it expands everything out.
Pretty I've got a couple of those.
Something like that. But either way, I think it'd be really interesting to find out. You know, it's all static energy. You're just talking about a whole heck of a lot more than what we're using right here. This is just a Van de Graaff generator. You don't have to have a Van de Graaff generator to actually run this thing. I mean, there's other ways to build, you know, Wimshurst. The Lord Kelvin generator would be a good potential to try to see if you could actually get that thing to run. You know, the better the charge you get. That's the Van de Graaff's. You plug it in the wall. It's easy. It's just got some nylon pulleys and a rubber belt that picks up a static charge and then charges up the top load. And so that one's, you know, it doesn't belong to me. It's Coltus's, but he told me I could use it while he was gone. So that's what I'm doing with it. Anyway,
yeah, I gotta either get me one of those or build me one of those.
It's pretty simple concept. All you really need is a couple nylon pulleys and a rubber belt. I'm sure a rubber band would work just fine. And basically, at the bottom, at the top, you got combs that pick up a static charge, and there's just a little electric motor that turns it. There's really not a whole lot to it, you know.
Yeah, an easy pulley. If you take two of those soda cans and you put them bottom to bottom, you're looking at a pulley. You can make one out of those real easy. And they're not going to twist and bend because of that curve at the bottom.
Yeah.
Leaves a nice wide spot. The main thing that you got to do is get that hole dead center and work from there. Make sure it doesn't get wallered out. You get it to the size that you want. You can make a nice small hole and thread that straight through.
Well, on one of those links, I think it was the Francis Hoxby link that I put in the Shazizz Radio and the Wake Radio chat room, somewhere down in there it talked about how these were like friction motors is what they called them, friction generators or something. But basically that's, you know, you're taking two things or it's got a little bit of friction going on the from the rubber band to the nylon deal, and it picking up on some metal combs at the top up there. That's how the Van de Graaff works. But this here, the old style Hoxby device was just a glass ball with they said they had mercury inside there, and also seemed like it said with carbon inside there. And as that's spinning around, it's building up a static charge that goes across and picks up on the opposite side. It's pretty cool stuff, man.
But yeah, I was looking at that. It's basically, contrary to popular belief, it's not the friction. It's the contact and then leaving the surface that basically generates the electricity.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Place. Yeah, friction has nothing to do with it. If you can build it without the friction, then you've made a more efficient machine.
Yeah, and even that Hoxby device right there, I mean, you would have absolutely no back EMF using static energy. It wouldn't be no slowing down of the armature or anything like that. And you could spin that thing as fast as you want. You know? Said that generator built by Francis Hoxby, I can't even pronounce that word. Anyway, London, 1719.
I figure that the only mechanical loss would be pulling the material away from the other material.
Yeah, but I'm saying
static charge.
I'm saying it'd be so insignificant that it wouldn't even matter, you know. Now, to get all down into, you know, the specifics of everything, I'm sure you're going to have some sort of, you know, loss via the, you know, mechanical energy or whatever, but nothing compared to what you would with your standard generator. And the key about the whole deal is the less work you have to put into turning the flywheel, the less fuel you'd have to use in the beginning. Imagine if you took a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton and you hooked it up to a long series, let's say a 10-foot series of Windsurf generators.
Right.
Dude, you'd create a lightning bolt out the other side of that and wouldn't even touch the fuel on that thing. It'd just be at idle speed, be spinning that thing at a crazy speed and creating super high voltage. I mean, look what that guy did with the doggone stator motors that come out of the newer washing machines, the direct drive or smart drive motors that they
smart
got.
Yeah.
Man, he was pulling arcs off of that thing that shoot, you could burn your house down with that stuff. Those arcs would kill you. You know, you're not talking about just a regular spark. You're talking about an arc. I mean, you could hear it. It was burning the air. And he did it with a little Briggs & Stratton lawnmower and hooked one of them up to that deal and fired that thing up and was pulling huge arcs off that thing. That's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to touch that one. I don't think you'd survive that one. If you did survive it, you'd probably be missing a finger or something. It'd probably be like one of them hot dogs on the barbecue grill that stayed on there a bit too long.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, there's all kinds of potentials there, you know. If the apocalyptic scene happened and the power grid went down and you couldn't run your washing machine anyway, I mean, take that washing machine and turn it into a generator. You know what I mean?
There's another form of a washing machine. Oops, excuse me. Another form of washing machine. Basically, you can do the... you can actually use wind to wash your clothes or whatever. It's pretty cool. Just make you a barrel-type... wind turbine like you built.
Yeah.
And put it on some good bearings. You can do that, but for the clothes dryer, you make a squirrel cage. And you put the clothes in there, and then let it turn your clothes, and it's exposed to the air, and just keeps on flopping around and around. Might have to put some bigger fins on it to get it, but that'll work. But in the apocalypse deal there, I wouldn't even worry about that. I'd pay, basically say, you know, just go ahead and build you a crank wringer and shake them things around.
You know, you laugh, but I would like to have one of them old-style washing machines like the granny used to use, man.
I have a friend that has one and uses it. What? He got tired of watching his electric bill, and he's been pretty much the, obsessed with saving electricity. Pretty much after me, we kind of have a little bit of an argument over, not a heated debate or anything, but we think about it. We think about it quite often. He sits there and, yeah, we got to do a video on this. And I said, sure. But he's been washing his clothes that way for well over a year now, and he's happy with the savings he's making. He says, that's an electric motor. The electric motor is nothing but a dead short. It really draws the amps.
Well, all you need for a washing machine is an agitator to basically stir the clothes back and forth instead of having to wash them around. So why couldn't you take that same old-style washing machine and take the motor out of it and hook a windmill to that doggone thing?
Just wash your clothes
on a windy day.
All but you still need to... You still need the, you still need to turn it to AC.
No, I'm saying basically, back in the old days, they used to use windmills to pump water.
And oh, yeah.
So you're not going to be trying to generate anything. You're just going to run a pulley from your windmill over to the doggone washing machine, and when the windmill's spinning around, it's turning your agitator inside there and washing the clothes.
Yeah, we've had this conversation over Kenny's house quite a few times. I was sitting there trying to rig him up there where his wife doesn't have to wring him out and do all this stuff. They've got one of them crank deals. They've been using that. She's strong enough to turn that thing. And basically, she'll just go ahead and do all the cleaning part of it and then let Kenny wring him out.
Yeah.
But he still wants to do a video on that. I'm telling him, well, shoot, man, let me carve you a prop. Let's get that stuff moving on its own.
Yeah, redneck washing machine, man.
That's right. You think if you could let that thing, even on a low wind day, just let it slowly wind up a mainspring, and then let the mainspring do the wash?
Yeah. You'd be amazed what you can do with gear ratios, man. You can get a lot of torque or a lot of speed out of it, just depending on what size of gears you use in the doggone thing.
That's right.
So... You know,
just for the subject matter itself, I got a couple of these old 12-volt electric tire pumps. I was thinking of taking one of those and just putting a prop on the shaft where that electric motor was that burned out. And from there, I'll just go ahead and put a prop to that and let it charge up a good sized tank. It might take a while.
I got a crazy idea. It would make for one heck of a movie. It would make for one heck of a reality TV series. What if we could get all of the mad science guys together for about 6 months to a year, and we could bring them all down here to my place down here. And basically, I will call up the power company and make them so mad that they will come out and take my power pole out and my electricity. So then I'm forced to use whatever I got, right?
Right.
And we could videotape how we take things from everything from washing machines to old microwaves to just total junk that's salvaged through an apocalypse and the apocalyptic mad scientists, you know, how to survive, and basically turn that into a show to where we show people how to take junk and build an electric grid of our own.
Well, you remember when we got invited to the TV show there, where they just basically wanted to exploit rednecks as dumb people that don't know what they're doing, pretty much.
Yeah.
But we'd get together and show them how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, basically step by step, live. You know, you're watching us build a doggone thing, watching all the shenanigans in the process. I would watch a movie like that.
Yeah, I'd watch a TV show like that.
Yeah, because I like that Junkyard Wars show that they had on there, where they had so much time to go around the junkyard and find things, and they had projects to build, like, you know, boats, cars that were boats as well, or whatever, all-terrain vehicles. And
I had friends invite me to be their partner on that.
Well, when I was watching that, I'm sitting there telling them as I'm watching them go through the junk pile, I said, "Grab that, you idiot!" And I'm like trying to tell them how to fix it. Of course, obviously they can't hear me; they're on TV. But you know, they're doing it in a. I think if you and I was on the same team with Raymond and a few of the other guys out there, I think we'd win that one.
Oh, Raymond would make sure it would happen.
And what would make it even better,
Boomer would say, "Well, we got that."
What would make winning even better is if we came up against some of the best engineers out there, all right? And they put their best educated guys out there, and we came out there, and we built it with junk, and it worked better than theirs.
Yeah, we bad.
Yeah, we'd do that too, man. Walk around strutting, "We bad."
And we still got the phone numbers and the Skype contacts. We could do that and just send them a video and watch them go gaga over it. I know we could do it. I got to get my butt up there.
Yeah, you know, we could do that anyway. We don't even have to have some sort of big network to do that, because we can just throw it up on our YouTube channels, man.
That's what I'm saying. You do it first, then you send them the videos, and then watch them drool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. I like your redneck.
What'd you say? Did I lose you again?
Did you lose me again?
Yeah, you said you liked the redneck.
Yeah, redneck hot tub.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, if you want a hot tub, you can go out and get them all day long for free, but you also have to have a 220 outlet for most of them. I did find one that was a 110. I ain't talked my friend out of it yet, but anyway, if you can take a doggone the equivalent of a coffee pot and heat that tub just as good as the 220 would. Now keep in mind, you know, when you start off, when you very first heat it up, it takes a little longer to get the doggone thing heated. But if you turn it on in the morning, it'll be ready for you, you know, about 4 hours later. It'd be warm. If you leave it on too long, it'll get too hot to set in.
Yeah, put your couple solar panels out there and just let it
yeah,
go.
Just let it
run.
You
got 12-volt hot water heaters that you stick in the side of the tank, and off just a couple solar panels, man. You don't need 3,600 watts to get hot water.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one time, man, we moved into a house and it had gas. And we tried to get the gas turned on, but they wanted $250 for the last person's back bill. I wasn't having it. We had hot water all the time. I had a cheap doggone $15 hair dryer, and I put it on low. I took that vent cap off the top, and down inside the middle of that, when you're using the gas or anything like that, it's got a twisted piece of metal that goes back and forth, left and right and left and right. It's just warped back and forth like lasagna noodles.
Yeah.
And what that does is bounces the heat to one side and then back to the other side for friction. And the friction of the air going through will basically throw the heat into the tank.
Cool.
If you just let it flow straight up the middle will flow faster, and you'll have that, what do they call it, lamina flow, where the air on the side doesn't move, but the air in the middle does. So if you're trying to get the heat out of it, that's the best way. So I stuck that 750 watts worth of on that deal here, which is supposed to use about 3,600 watts. Look, 20 minutes, that tank was hot. Man, I could turn it on every 15 minutes or so while people were taking showers at baths, and we had no problem. And doggone me, we didn't have much of an electric building. 750 watts cumulative does wonderful. We were never without hot water the whole time we were there. And when I left, I just plopped the other piece on and put the exhaust tube out. And the next person could sit there and pay that past due electric propane bill or natural gas bill. I wasn't going to play with it. They wanted also, they said they disconnected it. They were going to charge me to hook it up. No way, Hope.
Well, see, and that's the thing about the doggone power companies that makes me mad. Is, you know, before I was married to my wife, she came stay with me, and she had a bill from the past, and they found out she was staying with me, and they socked that bill onto my bill. And I'm like, well, you can't do that. We're not even married. And they said, well, it don't matter. She's enjoying the service, and so we're tacking it to your bill. And they did. Boy, you talk about being hotter than a firecracker. You know, that just made it even more where I wanted to find alternative energy sources.
They can't make you pay a roommate's bill.
But they did. They sure did. They've tacked it right on my bill. It's a $200-some-odd deal on top of my bill.
I've got a friend named Raul Jaramillo. He just bought 3 pieces of property, and a couple of them were like 2 acres. Got a house out there. Went to go turn the electricity on. They told him the guy owed $5,000. Wait a minute now. The guy that was there before, they let it go till it got to 5,000. They cut mine off when it gets to about 2 or 3. How do they let somebody get up to $5,000? I told them, man, you can fight this. This is actually illegal. They just do it because they can, and they can litigate and make it stretch out and be a pain in the butt. But you can sue them. Because now you got a property and you're paying taxes, and it's costing you money to keep this property, and it's costing you money because you can't rent it out to your cousin. Yeah, you can sue him. And I told him to do it, and he's in the process of doing it. And in the meantime, we're setting up wind turbines and getting solar panels for cheap and getting him set up for that so he can rent it.
Well, you know what?
I think that's a big bunch of hogwash.
One of the keys to this whole deal is we don't have to wait around for an apocalyptic scenario to stick it to the man as far as the dang electric company comes. Because if you can learn how to save money on your electric bill just doing the simple things, they got less pennies in their pocket. And you just keep on doing that, find other ways to supplement your lights with solar and wind or whatever, and just keep on hitting them. Keep on hitting them in the wallet. And
that's pretty much what I told Raul. And I says, look, dude, I got a Chinese wind turbine out here giving me. It's worth about $300. You got some pipe. We'll go ahead and put that sucker up there. Go get some old car batteries. Even if they're dead, we'll turn them over to alum batteries. You know, for that one time of $300 or so, let's say you don't have any more electric bill. All you need is light and you need hot water. We'll put a solar panel up on there. We'll go to Missouri Wind and Solar and get one of them 12-volt hot water heater elements and stick it right into the side of your doggone electric water heater. Disconnect the power lines from that, and we'll just go ahead and put the 12 volts there. It works either way. It's a thermal mechanical switch. So it doesn't matter. You got a 12-volt hot water heater element in there, and you're running 12 volts, it will turn on, and it will turn off.
How long do you think a glow plug would last if you was running it constant?
I've never actually held a glow plug or actually seen the whole deal. All I know is that they're in diesel motors.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting ready to say.
It ought to work.
If you could get a hold of a glow plug out of an old diesel motor, and those are 12 volts, you could sit there and run that thing inside that water.
Yeah, you could. And when the water got up to a certain temperature, that little temperature diaphragm.
Actually, all the farmers out there use pretty much the same type of deal. They got just an element that they put down in the bottom of the cattle tanks to keep them from freezing up in the winter.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, the glow plug ain't no difference other than the size of it.
Yeah, as long as the voltage is close to what you can generate, then you're not going to have a problem.
Yeah. That's why I've always said while I'm doing alternative energy that I want to keep down 12 volts is the sweet zone right there, because if you can't generate 12 volts of electricity, then you got a problem. I mean, you could do that with doggone just a junky wind turbine, you know. So
man, I got a 12 foot by 6 foot wide hot water heater. Looking at a sheet of plywood, but it's another 4 foot longer, and that thing has got these thin aluminum deals inside there that's painted flat black, and it's got a tempered piece of glass that runs the whole length of that sucker. We're throwing that up on the roof, and at that point, basically, I'm going to have it go from that into the hot water heater. That means.
Yeah, you cut out again. What I'd like to get a hold of is one of them old merry-go-rounds like they got on the little kids' playgrounds.
Yeah.
And hook some doggone sails to that thing. You know, like the surfboard sails?
Right.
Man, could you imagine how much torque you could get off of that?
Yeah, that sugar would generate anyway, even when...
Concrete that down into the ground real good, and have them sails kicking, picking up the least amount of wind.
Dude, you can make that so easy. All you need, how many of these rear end axles have you found laying around off of cars?
There's quite a few up there, and actually that's a good idea because those have the gears in there with it'd be geared up for some torque.
Yeah, well, you could run a shaft to it, but you can leave that pumpkin down in the ground, seal it all up, and cover it, make sure the dirt ain't good.
You check your microphone, buddy. You keep going in and out.
I wonder why that is. Oh. Anyway, you can take that axle, and all you got to do is bolt a rim to it, and you can weld to it and make anything you want. It is stout.
Yep. That's an idea. Good idea.
Heavy duty bearings and everything. I mean, you take a.
Get a hold of one of the Positrac rear ends, and you got two axles on the one on each end that you can do some work with.
Oh yeah.
See, this would be great for the show, man. That's that show that we were just talking about creating.
Yeah.
Getting an old rear end and maybe even a transmission or whatever, and just. Just doing it, it'd be fun, you know?
Out south of town, he's got two props, one on each end of that axle. And it turns a drive shaft that runs all the way down into his little shack down there where he has the generator, and it's a big generator sitting on the floor. So
Yeah, you went again. I'm really interested in this conversation, and you keep dropping out.
I hear you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Yeah, so all the workings are up.
Don't move. Whatever you're doing, it's like you cut out if you move your head or something. Maybe you got to shorten your wire.
I think it's Skype.
Probably. Well, hang up and recall then. Do-do-do-do-do. Well, hopefully he'll get that sorted out. But yeah, that would be an amazing idea, taking an old rear end out of any old vehicle and using that for a turbine. And I like the idea you was talking about your friend having a prop on each end of that thing.
Yeah, that thing's nice. It's painted all nice, red, white, and blue. It looks great from the road. And I'm going down the road, and I'm looking at a windsock that is across the road from his place, and the windsock is barely moving. It's not even at... 20 degrees from rest.
If you could find the center of the barrel, you could actually make some bolt holes where you could bolt one of them doggone barrels right directly to that hub of that rear end and have one on each end.
Yeah, you could.
And instead of putting the fins inside like I did on mine, put them on the outside so that they catch more air that way. The reason why I put mine on the inside was so that it would catch air from any direction better, because I did a little small deal, and it was pretty impressive how good it picked up wind. I'm actually rebuilding that right now, putting some better wheels and bearings on it.
If you were going to do something that was a horizontal shaft, a vertical shaft, I'd go ahead and make you a Savinist. It works a whole lot better than that design of the barrel you.
Well, I'm basically just showing there's all kinds of possibilities. I mean, that's just junk, all right? I just took just junk.
And Boomer has as many of them barrels as you want. I think he's got over 50 of them stored up now.
Tell him to load his trailer up. Come on down.
We'll bring you a few. Yeah, we'll bring you a few of those. Matter of fact, Boomer probably cut them in half so they fit on the trailer.
I've got a few of them left outside that I think I can work with. I'm going to see. I think there's an old rear end laying out there in the field somewhere. I'm going to go get that.
There you go. Yeah, well, Boomer's got the plasma cutter, so we got it made.
Cool. Yeah, so there you go, man. There, we got a plan for a new show. Throw that up on the YouTube channels there and show people how to take junk, just flat out junk. That's why everything I built on all my videos, I used recycled junk, just to prove it.
You know what my favorite is?
Which one?
Well, you took an old black and white TV and turned it into an oscilloscope with a few.
Yeah, so, you know, what would you have done with that otherwise? You can't watch TV on it unless you got a digital converter box, so, you know, pretty much there's a whole lot of old analog TVs out there that are just worthless. And so now you actually got a use for it, you know?
I looked at that and I said, yes, I am going to build me one, and I haven't yet. But I got plenty of black and white TVs. Problem is, I put them all outside because I don't want.
Well, it's really simple. All you got to do is tap into the horizontal and the vertical coils. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Right on the back of the picture tube.
Yeah. And all you're doing when you produce energy through there is basically the same thing the TV does whenever your signal's coming in.
You start measuring higher voltage and you forget.
Yeah.
Tubes take a licking and keep on ticking, but if you blew it, whatever. You got another TV?
You know, you could actually put a grid on that thing as well to measure the waveform. You just have to take a known voltage and, you know, make some measurements and draw you a grid on the front of that.
Yep.
It'd be simple.
Yeah, but I think it'd be real simple. The big screen TVs, that the projector type TV.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool. Make one out of that.
Yeah, then you trace three sit. Blue one and a green one.
Yep.
So you could actually show three phases of electricity as you crank a little generator.
Well, there's all kinds of possibilities, and like I said, that's the reason why I used all recycled stuff, because if you can build it out of junk, then there ain't no reason why the average Joe couldn't do it in the worst case scenario, getting electricity. I mean, the easiest portion of all your generating capability is going to be lighting, because you have access to fluorescent bulbs. Even the bad ones you can light up with high voltage.
That's right. That's right.
So, if you light your entire house off of the equivalence of a 12-volt battery and a 20,000-volt oil burner igniter, and you got all the lighting you could handle, the rest of that is just heating and cooling. You know, you can heat your house with wood-burning stoves or cool it down using... There's an old way that you can take and bury a 30-foot culvert pipe under the ground, 6 feet under the ground, and put one in your house, and of course put a screen on each end so you ain't got nothing crawling in your house. But when you put a fan in front of that, it sucks the hot air from the outside, drops it down and cools it down underground, and then blows it up in your house. It's air conditioning. There's actually a castle up in Sedalia, Missouri, that the doctor that built this castle built it over a cave system, and that cave system is the air conditioner for the entire castle. He had
right.
air conditioner before anybody else had air conditioner.
Yeah, you never have to worry about having oxygen down in there.
Yeah.
Air flows. That's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, good bit of news there. I got a friend went to cleaning up his yard and everything, and he's got an old catamaran sitting out there in the back.
Yeah?
And I immediately thought pop-pop boat.
Oh, cool.
And he says, yeah, well, let's build it. I says, cool. So that might be up in the works here. Either that or a Stirling engine we'll put on there and just putt around on the lake with a log all damn day.
And also on the pop boat deal, as far as building a full-size version, there's another guy that did a video out there of it, and all he had was a single straw on there, and it didn't have the coils like I was doing it, but he was still able to get that thing to cruise along. And so we were thinking,
straight straw?
Yeah. He heated up the deal up there, you know, and him and I got to talking about how this thing actually functions. Now, I still believe the coil system on one side actually builds up pressure inside there, you know, turns it into steam, and then creates a suction on one side and then blows it out the other end. But according to the way he did this, it was almost working like the Stirling engine, when the heat pressure is what was actually pushing it along.
Yeah, water goes by it, it turns into steam quick because it goes to a flash. You got to find the right spot on that, and it basically jets it out the back, and then everything cools off, so it throws water up past it, to the upper section of it. If you find the right spot, you can get that thing tuned sweet.
If he's right on what he was saying on there, that makes it even cheaper to make a full-size pop version, because you could get some old gas pipe, you know, the metal gas pipe with the caps and everything, and just put maybe a slight bend on the end of it, you know, like the portion that you got going down bent underneath the boat, and then you could use elbows to bring it up through the bottom of the boat, and then bring it up over the top and make a slight bend on it. So, you know, you could prime it with water initially in each one of the tubes, and you could put as many as you want on there and put it inside a little kind of like a boiler system, and once you get that thing started, you never have to do anything but keep the fire stoked.
That's right. I think it'd be sweet. And mine never sounded the same any time I started it, but it always kicked real nice.
Well, his didn't make any noise whatsoever. The pop was coming from like the water hammer effect inside the diaphragm. That's where the popping noise was coming from. But his didn't make no sound. It was just using basically the heat pressure like the Stirling engine and forcing it out. Of course, you know, when you force the pressure out one end, it is also going to be a backflow, so some of the water molecules would be getting back up inside that pipe, which would basically put more steam back in there as well. So, you know.
The catamaran, in order to run the thing, you'd have to have a fire on the boat. In between those two pontoons, there's plenty of room for a fire.
Yeah. Well, it don't even have to be a real big fire. You could use regular barbecue charcoal, for that matter. You know, build you
a... But you know what? If you needed to put it out, you say, okay, at the end of the line, you just dip the engine.
Well, as far as being able to control the speed, all you need is something to release the pressure, some sort of pressure valve that you can control, you know, open it up.
Yeah, a little extra valve. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I think you'd be going for max speed because it'd be pretty slow.
Well, I don't know, because I've seen some of the ones, especially the ones the Canadian guys were doing, that they were cooking right along, man. You know, scaled up and measuring it in speed like knots or something like that. I think they were doing pretty doggone good.
Well, vision this. If you need more engine, then you just put more tubes in there. And you have to build if you have those tubes going through a bigger tube that you can have, like the top of a rocket stove.
Yeah,
it would guide it right across each of them tubes. You could have them things stacked vertically and then bent where they go down into the water and jet out the way that you want them to.
Yeah, there's another project for this summer.
A rocket stove, man. A rocket stove uses that vacuum from the flue. Man, I'll tell you what, that means you can put the heat exam.
Yeah, you cut out again. Anyway, we're down to the last few minutes. You got anything last you want to say real quick?
No, just keep smiling, have a ball, and if you got any ideas, don't sit there and wonder about them for a long time. Just do it.
Yeah, join us over here on ShazizRadio.com and Awake Radio and Tinosaur Radio and Scottish Sovereigns on the Land and 1800 Online. Can you remember any more of them?
These buddy? Changing times, No Borders, radio, Pulse Radio News, and oh my goodness, there's a whole bunch.
Yeah, jump in one of the chat rooms over there and talk, and we can all get connected and share our ideas with one another as far as free energy. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because we're swimming in the sea of it.
Yes.
We're going to show you how to take jump and use it during the apocalypse to make power. So with that said, check out Muddy's channel over there, Muddy Muddy Mudman, and Shaziz over on Shaziz, and check out Ryan Abrams' lab and Russ from RWG Research and Tin Man and Lid Motor and Rimstar.org, and there's a bunch of guys out there.
Sweet Deeds. Hello to Stephen Gibbons. Yeah,
don't forget about Deeds. He's doing some Tracy. Amazing work.
Two Dog, waving at y'all. Thanks for stopping by. Enjoyed it.
All right. Well, peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned for the Hope Show. Take care.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 years!